Today in a special episode, we'll be interviewing comedian Dan St. Germain. This is Doctor versus Comedian. I'm Dr. Asif Doja, and this is the Doctor of Laughs.
Not a real doctor.
Ali Hassan. Every episode, what we normally do is I pick a topic for Ali from comedy and entertainment, and I question him about it. Then Ali picks a topic from medicine and health and grills me on that topic. However, today is a special episode. Today, our guest is comedian, writer, and podcaster Dan St. Germain, whose new special, Dance Fatty Dance, is available for free on YouTube right now. Now, we don't have just one medical topic today, but in our interview with Dan, we will touch on some medical topics that he brings up in his special. So stay tuned for those.
Also, I'm going to tell you that some people listen with their children because generally we don't swear on this show. This episode will be different in that regard too. Dan is, you know, his brand is a little bit more adultish, if you will. Some adult words are used several times. So if you don't like that, or if you are with kids, I would say you should feel warned that there will be some language issues. If you're comfortable with that, you're in for a treat. This is a great time talking to Dan.
I want to book a big role in Hollywood. To give you an idea how good I am at auditioning, 3 weeks ago, I auditioned for the Mucinex guy, and they told my agent they were looking for someone more likable. Yeah, you know that guy made out of boogers? Well, we don't think you're charming enough for it. I'm sorry.
Welcome to the podcast, Dan St. Germain.
Thank you for having me, sir. Really saw how the sausage is made on this thing. I'm glad to be here. Happy April, everybody.
Happy April.
Happy WrestleMania weekend. That gives you an idea of where we're
recording. Oh, yeah. Let's let people know that there's both excitement and anxiety in Dan's life.
I just survived an earthquake in New York City. Thank God. And WrestleMania is good. So it's a cavalcade of emotions. It's a real mixed bag. No, this is like the weekend I look forward to every year. I'm doing stand up tonight, but I'm not doing stand up the next two nights. So that's how you know I'm actually caring about something if I have to take stand up off from it.
No kidding. And actually, you had to take stand up off for a couple of weeks because of your throat, I think.
My throat last weekend, for sure. I've had, because of other health, drug, and alcohol issues, I've had to take off. I also took off because I didn't want to do it for like 2 years. So I was just kind of writing. And now, you know, they dragged me back in. And by that, I mean money.
Yeah.
Just even a lot of money. You'd be surprised how little money it takes to drag me back in. So, but I am really enjoying it now. I do have a new special, Dance Fatty Dance. That's why I'm on this bad boy. Check it out. It's free on YouTube. Get those view counts up, guys. I paid for like a YouTube campaign and I woke up this morning and like 500 views were gone. And I was like, fuck. This is like
deleted.
And I read, the only thing I can find on Google is that like they, sometimes YouTube like scans the views and sees which ones are bots. And I'm like, well, keep my bot views, damn it. I didn't fucking, that's not my fault the bots came to me. I didn't pay for the bots.
You're not recruiting from a bot farm?
No, I'm not recruiting from a bot farm, but luckily they only took 500 views off. But we gonna want to get it to 100,000, folks. Come on.
Yeah.
We're almost.
You're going to get at least 500 back from this.
That's
from
right.
This moment alone, even if we cut the interview right
Thank
now.
Thank you. Just this moment, just release it into the interwebs.
You've touched on so many things that we want to talk about during our time together.
You're like, first off, Israel. And I'm like, oh, no.
You didn't touch upon it, but we wish you would have.
That's right. So let's do it. Right. We'll start with the easy ones. No, why don't we start with this, Dan? Because a lot of our guests, some of them may have, a lot of our listeners may have heard about you, some may not have. So on our podcast, we often have people talk about their origin stories. So we want to know how you became Dan St. Germain hyphen comedian.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I mean, it's just one of those things where I got out of college and I was like kind of like a playwright actor. I did comedy a couple times in high school. It was all really bad. But if you don't have like a ton of money, like, and you can't make your own film, or you can't like you know, produce your own like collective theater, pay for grad school. Stand-up's kind of a medium where poor people go a lot of the times, because, you know, you can just get up at an open mic, perform something you've written and see if it's good or not. And it's one of the few mediums that still has that, although there's a lot more paid open mics now. It was one of those that's kind of what my life was for a couple of years. And I did enjoy that. I still enjoy the thrill of trying a new joke and seeing if it works. You know, there's nothing like totality of a bomb set or a great set. It feels very much like, you know, falling in love or heartbreak, not to wax too poetical. So I guess that's kind of what keeps me coming back. Yeah, and now I enjoy it again. I've always had like a love-hate relationship with it, but now I kind of enjoy it again. So
I saw you in 2013, Dan, just for laughs. It was either 2012 or 2013, and I remember thinking, I'll be damned if this guy isn't going to be a household name.
Well, you were damned.
I was damned. I remain damned. We're going to hopefully change that. But now I'm understanding that you did dip in and out. But when Asif said, have you heard of Dan St. Germain? I'm like, yeah, not for a while. But I remember that dude so fondly.
No, thank you,
and he
brother.
Said, yeah, he's really in the wrestling world. So in my mind, I was like, maybe wrestling was more exciting than stand-up? And you never know, people... Well,
no, I mean, I have transitioned. I was in writing rooms for like 4 years, writing on different TV shows. And then after that, I kind of got into writing thrillers. I do still have a show alive at Peacock right now that's a comedy cartoon with Stone Cold Steve Austin and Dan Soder. We're waiting to hear back. We just turned in the third draft, waiting to hear back on that. I'm developing another show with Dan Soder. But I've been doing stand-up a lot more lately. And, you know, I'm going to be actually doing a lot of big podcasts next month, a lot of big shows and festivals. So I'm for sure trying to make a reemergence into the stand-up scene. But a lot of life stuff happened. I got married. My mom died. You know, I was still doing stand-up, but it was more like on the side because I was writing so much. And I also was one of these idiots who thought, oh, the way to do this is to go up from like the industry channels, and you know, because I had like a development deal at Fox or a couple of script deals in a row, I should say. And it turns out, no, you should be building your own fucking thing. And I'm just kind of realizing that now. So I've made almost every mistake a comedian can make in some ways without, you know, wearing blackface or saying the N-word or taking my dick out during
There's still time.
The night rally. But yeah, there's still time. So I'm back on the horse, baby. I'm working on the new special now. So
this is interesting. I wanted to talk to you about that because you just alluded to it right now. There's two things on concurrently right now. There's there's Dance Fatty Dance, and then there's also a Comedy Central,
yeah,
like a 25-minute special that also comes up.
Yeah.
When you look up Dan, and there's no overlap. It's two different things.
All different jokes.
And you're working on another special right now. So
yes.
When you say you're back, you're not exaggerating.
No, I am for sure back. I have two albums. The first album has a lot of stuff from the half hour. And the second album has some stuff from this new special, some stuff it doesn't. I also have, you know, like four late night sets, a bunch of Comedy Central, other like, you know, This Is Not Happening. And they have like a featuring set. So you can get like different jokes from there. But yeah, I'm totally back now. And I'm about halfway through writing a new act. I was kind of taking so much time to do other stuff, writing movies, writing, you know, new TV shows, some of which sold, some of which did not. Yeah, I'm kind of like back in it now and I'm seeing... You know, there is a real high of like getting stuff out there and having like instant feedback. And I think like the kind of comedy that I do is going to make a comeback a little bit. I feel like it's been a lot of either edgelord or woke stuff, you know, for a while, where it's been either, you know, it's kind of like straddling each side of the fence. And I think dark and silly and just comedy for the sake of comedy is coming back. So
let me ask you about that a little bit, too. You know, when people think comedy, and I'm talking about sort of the general public, they're thinking either social media or really sort of Netflix, or
right,
maybe you can find it, HBO, Amazon, in the case of Gaffigan,
yeah,
Nate Bargatze. But there is this move, you know, I think I saw Andrew Schultz do it. He did it in a way that I noticed. I was like, oh, right, he doesn't have to do that. And yet he did. And then I've seen more comics put their stuff up on YouTube and offer it for free. Can you talk a little bit about the rationale behind that? Because you're talking about all this paid work you've done, the movie writing, this writing development.
Well, some of it's paid, some of it's not paid.
Some of it's okay, some of it's on spec.
Yeah.
But you know what it means to get paid, yeah. And this would be an unpaid thing. Obviously, there's a vision associated with it.
Well, it's a question of, you know, like a lot of, like Andrew made the decision to bet on himself, although he like talks about how he's like industry independent, but he for sure got helped by Viacom, like a lot of us did when he was starting out. But I think like building your own thing is where it's at right now. And I kind of came late to that party because for a while there was that, you know, hey, you start off with a late night set, you get Montreal, then you get a half hour special on Comedy Central, and then you get an hour special. And almost the machine is built that you get tossed into that machine. And then, you know, people basically start coming to you. And that's just not the case anymore. And I even with this last special, I did have an offer. You know, and it was a very small offer to do it for like, you know, get paid like 10 grand and do an hour. And I was like, I don't want to really do an hour. I don't think people watch a full hour and to do it all in the same theater that everybody else was doing it. And I'm like, I'm going to do the opposite of that and try to like, you know, make what I think I'm the kind of special I'm really good at, which is like an intimate venue where I can really see the lights of everybody's eyes and kind of a black box theater. So, and I just wanted to have, you know, a piece of my own work. There's so many people that don't have, you know, their own stuff out. But of course I picked March, where it seems like everybody in the fucking world is releasing a special. I think the ghost of Richard Pryor is about to release one. So I do wish I'd maybe released that in February. But, you know, hey, man, I mean, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as a crowded marketplace, or you can look at it, oh, there's a renaissance of good comedy again. I'm sorry, I'm fucking yawning. I've been stressed out this entire morning. We had this earthquake and then this fucking... It just always feels like show business is like, you know, the I Love Lucy chocolate scene where you're just like trying to keep up with shit as it happens. But yeah.
Great reference. Great reference.
Thank you.
Maybe we could talk about the other aspect of it, because this idea of social media, so YouTube separate, because that's like 45 minutes or whatever, but then social media, you know, some people say, okay, use TikTok, use Instagram, you're going to be more connected to your fans. Some people say it's a chore. I guess, what are your thoughts about this and then posting it? So should you post original material, or should you just do your crowd work like Matt Rife, you know, the classic guy is doing that?
Yeah, I guess you can make more money doing crowd work, but of course I pick original material like an idiot. I try to post like 3 videos a week on my YouTube channel and my Instagram. Look, I still have like really a small following right now. I just have like 20,000 Instagram followers, you know, 16,000 Twitter followers, like fucking 1,200 or 1,300 YouTube subscribers. I'm trying to get that up by building stuff. But I guess, yeah, I have a TikTok. It's like 5,500 or something like that. But who knows, maybe the U.S. government's going to get rid of that anyway. Luckily, I have a lot of material and a lot of jokes that are good that I can cut up. And, you know, anything from this, I probably have like, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours of good clippable material that I can just throw online. And I'm not going to be like doing that shit again. So that helps. And you can kind of release it again a year later. As far as the sketches, I haven't had as much like success with that. That seems like its own fucking thing. Sorry, this is so boring to talk about career stuff.
What?
Because, well, yeah, I don't know.
I wanted to know if you enjoy it. That was my thing. Like, do you enjoy that part of it? Because you see that you're on a lot of, you hustle a fair amount.
Right.
But just because you hustle and go to this radio show and that radio show and do the podcasting and talk about the wrestling podcast and then the show, that doesn't necessarily mean that you also have it in you to post videos. And I don't know, do you enjoy that part of comedy? Or is that,
I mean, the most you're gonna ever have fun with is like working on a new joke and seeing if it's fun and playing to a hot crowd. So like anything as far as the social is not going to be as fun as that. It is more of a means to an end. But I mean, I'd be lying to say that there's not some serotonin part of the brain that if, you know, like a video gets 1 million views or something and everybody seems to be loving it, you know, of course you are addicted to that sort of, I guess, approval too. But I mean, it has kind of like, you know, I always say it's like the robots have risen and they're us watching people glued to their phone. And I'm unfortunately the same way. So, but then I have other friends of mine who...
The call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, who are very good comics who have, you know, decided to kind of just keep in the writing world and not do that and not whore themselves out as much. And only time will tell who made the right decision. But kind of just keep things afloat.
I remember a guy, you know, just talking about like the testing of a joke in an audience. I remember a guy, I meet him, you know, in Canada, there was like during the pandemic, close down, open up, close down, open up. So one of the brief opening up, I meet this guy and I've never met him before. And he goes, yeah, I'm a comedian. Nice to meet you. I'm like, oh, I've never seen you. Like, how long have you been doing comedy? He goes, oh, I started in the summer of 2020.
Oh, and I'm like, my God, what does that even mean?
So you, exactly. I was like, so you haven't done many live shows. He goes, no, but I do a ton of like online shows.
I hated that. Fucking hated that.
I had this uncontrollable urge to just sort of punch this guy in the face. Really have that a lot.
I did two Zoom shows. One, because I was paid a couple grand to do it, which is like kind of unheard of. And then the other one, I was like, oh, this was a terrible mistake as soon as I did it. It's crazy, man. You're like talking into... I mean, that's what YouTube is for, is that you talk to your own channel. If you want to do that, there's already a medium for it. To have these YouTube comedy shows, I just don't understand. I mean, look, we're going to do our live, you know, WrestleMania show tomorrow. We invite the Patreons. It'll probably be like 30 to 60 people just watching us do it. But as far as like actually doing stand up and trying to get feedback, you know, you're not hearing what's going on. And I do think that that's a you know, surefire way to promote mental illness, whether it's depression or delusion. You know, like it's either I'm hearing the laughs, no one else is hearing, or I can't hear the laughs, let me jump off a bridge. So I don't subscribe to that.
I want to ask you about one other thing in this comedy world, and it's no longer about your career, so it won't be
Thank
as
God.
Painful.
It won't be as painful.
It's sort of about your career. I'm sorry, Dan. It's not, but you know, Asif and I talk about an entertainment topic and a medical topic, and with Just for Laughs sort of folding.
Did fold, man.
We did it.
You guys are on the Canadian side of the border, right?
We're on the Canadian side. I also grew up in Montreal.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a great city. It's the best city. I love that city.
We used to have a jazz fest, and then we used to have a comedy fest, and it would bring in like interesting people, and I, how many late night parties I went to and had great time. So for me, it's also a nostalgia issue. I'm like, oh man, nothing good lasts. That sucks.
Yeah.
As you're on the American side, given that you're on the American side, what does it mean for you for something like what you guys would always call it, the Montreal Festival? What does it mean that that doesn't exist, or does it mean anything?
I don't think it's meant as much the last couple of years, and that's truthfully why it's folded. But I had a good experience there. I went like three times. I got to do some really cool shows. I got to meet some great people. You know, it did help as far as, you know, helping move a late night set faster along or selling a show to somebody. But, you know, it wasn't like one of these things like, I guess, Aspen used to be in the 80s where the entertainment world like immediately spreads its legs for you. It was a festival and it's a beautiful city. I actually was just doing stand up at the Nest last summer.
Mm-hmm. You're going back this June?
I don't know. I hope more. I draw more people. I'm trying to set up a Canadian tour with this guy, Paul, right now. And hopefully with some of the stuff I'm doing, I'll be able to get some more asses into the seats. I mean, I love fucking Montreal. It's my, you know, it is my favorite place I've played in Canada. I mean, the other places I played are like Calgary, which was dog shit, Winnipeg, which was dog shit, and Vancouver, which is also pretty good, I guess.
In case anybody's wondering and getting their back up about that.
Oh, in Toronto.
Winnipeg and Calgary are dog shit because of where you stay and where you perform. You're sort of in the middle of nowhere.
Those
clubs. I know which clubs you're referring to.
Yeah.
And you're in like these suburban parking lot clubs, and then the condo is right there. So you're not getting out to experience anything.
No,
right?
For sure not. But that's comedy is very lonely too, you know, and especially it almost gets more lonely when you're married because, you know, at least like when you're like single, you're like, all right, maybe I'll meet somebody, you know, and when you're married, you have the love of your life at home and you're just kind of sitting at a fucking Ruby Tuesdays, you know, knowing you're going to watch Final Destination for the 10th time when you get home. So it really, I guess it just depends on what the city is. But yeah, I mean, I like Canada a lot. Every time anything ends in comedy, it's usually it's a bummer. I remember people were like, oh, thank God they're ending like the Big Bang Theory. And you're like, well, then now like 20 writers are out of work. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, maybe it wasn't for you, but it helps with comedy. So the more jobs, the better. So I've never really understood that. I mean, I understand you don't want a bunch of things to be shitty, but you also want the opportunities to be there. You want people. I mean, like for sure, I've written on shows that I don't fucking love, but it's been able to fund the other stuff that I want to do.
I've had to explain that to regular audience members, but it's always a shock when you have to explain that to people in the entertainment business where they're like, oh, you got booked on that show? Isn't that out in Newfoundland? Like, yeah, who cares? This is the business.
Just do it.
You go where the business. What does that
mean? Go where they'll have you. Go where they'll have you, dude. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, if the money, money's right, I'm going to be, you know, doing a set in the Ukraine. You know, I don't give a shit. I'm a fucking clown. As Dan Soder would say, I'm a fucking mall clown. You know, just book me wherever and I'll be there, you know, jack of all trades and master of none, that kind of thing.
Clown for hire, sure.
Yeah.
So speaking of Dan, I was going to ask you about this. So you've obviously written with a lot of other people, Nikki Glaser, Michelle Wolf, lots of people.
I'm helping Nikki out on a roast right now, actually. I don't know.
Oh, awesome.
No, I'm allowed to say the roast, but it's going to be pretty sweet.
We'll stay tuned. But Dan, you talked about working with Dan Soder on Stone Cold Law. And can you tell us about how you guys came up with this? So obviously, as you said, Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, probably the most popular wrestler.
Well, it was Stone Cold's. I mean, it was not Stone Cold's. It was Dan's original idea. And then I just kind of helped him build the world. And then it kind of became both of ours. That's probably how Soder would describe it, too. And luckily, Dan has the same agent that Steve does. We pitched to Steve. He fucking loved it. And we pitched it to a bunch of networks. We got two offers. We went with one. And we're still working on it now. And we're kind of hoping that... And I mean, it's been crazy because WWE has gone through a couple owners. That whole process has been very bizarre. But we think, you know, the script that we came up with is really great. And I'm hoping it gets a shot. I really think it could be a really fun show to have on the air.
Are you able to talk about, like, is he playing?
He's playing himself.
Kind of like a Chuck Norris type. He's himself, but he.
It is that version, but he's a pro bono lawyer, but it's basically still Walker, Texas Ranger as a pro bono lawyer. Because we were should we write a law show? And we're like, no, it'll have law Christmas wrapping, but it's an action show. And, you know, there's still stuff about the law in it. Yeah, I mean, we definitely framed it after a more of like a MacGyver or A-Team or Walker, Texas Ranger, like a kind of a comedy version of that.
Any wrestling, like, does he
for sure
crush a beer on his forehead and chug it after he wins a case?
He never really crushed a beer on his forehead. That's a Sandman thing, sir. But he does.
Yeah, loser.
He used to just open a beer. He used to open a beer and chug it. Sorry.
He does. There are beers mysteriously thrown at him from off screen all the time that he drinks. We never do. It's going to be, I think it's going to be like our version of The Office. Who's shooting The Office? You know, we'll never find out who's throwing these cans. I don't want to blow anything else, but we do have, there will be wrestlers in it. Part of the reason this took so fucking long is because we wanted to be able to use other wrestlers and other property that WWE has. And whenever you use, I mean, imagine, you know, selling a show and then asking Disney to use Mickey Mouse. And so that's kind of the hoops that we had to jump through to get this going. And we did. Somehow we got, you know, we jumped through the hoops. I mean, knock on wood, it's still alive. But because we jumped through this hoops, you know, we can have Andre the Giant. We can have Macho Man Randy Savage. We can bring in your favorite wrestlers. It's very exciting. You know, it's very exciting.
So you said you finished the third draft. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not in show business like you and Ollie, so I don't really know. So does that mean it's for sure a go, or you believe it when it airs on TV?
Now we're waiting on a pilot. So it's not even for sure a pilot yet, but it is right now in the hands of Peacock. They like the last draft. And we're hoping that they give us a
Peacock pilot. Is not a wrestler's name, by the way, just for our listeners. Peacock is the NBC subsidiary.
Their streaming service. So plenty of wrestlers Peacock, but no, there's no gimmick of the Peacock. Although I guess Dalton Castle is a little bit, that's a little bit of his gimmick, or Gorgeous George.
Gorgeous George.
Yeah, we're going to pray to all. And if not, me and Dan have another idea for a show that we would start developing right after this guy. So constantly keeping the ball rolling, constantly doing fun things in the business and trying to just make funny shit, man, make good shit, make stuff that doesn't fucking stink.
So Dan and I are wrestling fans. I listen to Dan's podcast, which is Wrestle Roast mm-hmm. every week.
Thank you, sir.
Ali is into wrestling, not quite as much as
I mean, I was. That was my youth, and I used to get so angry at my dad being like, it's all fake. I'm like, no, it isn't.
Well, to be fair, Asif looks, he looks more rested than both of us, so I think he made the right choice, you know?
That's right, going into medicine. Exactly. So let's do a couple wrestling questions, Dan. I would probably guess that most of our audience is not as into wrestling as me. You all just go on a limb and say that.
Are you kidding me? A bunch of doctors?
And so, you know what? Majority of our audience is women. It's 3/4 women. So,
oh my God. What are those?
That's sexist for me to say. But it's sexist for me
your
to say.
Your wife will tell you. You're wrestling.
Yeah, no, but.
Yeah, it is sexist for you to say that.
How would you, so we got WrestleMania coming up this weekend. This podcast will come out a week after that. So, but Dan, you're watching it. Are you going? Because it's close to you.
No, I'm not going to go. I've been to 2 manias before. I was at 35 and I was at 11 when I was a young pup. No, I'm going to be watching at Dan Soder's place. We're going to be eating a lot of junk food. And that's kind of my favorite way to do it now, especially now, you know, it's such a nightmare trying to pile everybody into a stadium. And, you know, like I remember when I was leaving 35, all the trains had shut down and there was like torrential downpour. It was kind of a fucking mess. So God. I'm excited to, we can curse on this, right?
At his 17th F-bomb and was like, hey, hold on a second.
We curse.
We'll be okay. How would you tell someone, say you're like, wrestling is hot now. Let's agree, Dan. It's the hottest it's been in 20 years, 20 plus years.
Which, by the way, that means it's kind of hot. You know, when people say it's the hottest, it's like, oh, maybe three more people know about it.
I actually think that's a huge comment because when I was a kid, I was like, it's never going to get bigger than Hulkamania. Like, this is insane. Who didn't know who Hogan was? Then The Rock comes in. I was sort of fading out at that time. Yeah. But I felt like 3 out of 10 people, which is a lot of people, would know, like, can you smell what The Rock is cooking? They go, I know what you're talking about there, you know?
And so everybody knows Stone Cold Hogan, The Rock, and I think a little bit of Cena. Those are the four people still everybody knows.
Sure. But yeah, to say that it's bigger than it's ever been, Asif, I think that's quite a comment on it. Yeah.
So how would you, Dan, if you had to talk to somebody who, wrestling, what? You guys like wrestling? How would you say, this is the reason why I like this, and this is the reason why you should check it out? That's my challenge.
You know, it's being able to tell somebody off in a magical robe. It's the perfect combination of combat sports and theater. So if you like musicals and you also like UFC, it's the medium for you. I think it's uniquely American. It's uniquely P.T. Barnum, meat and potatoes, get somebody into a venue to watch a show. And I think, you know, as far as us being a stand-up comic, you know, we have so little similarities to actors and musicians and people who are, I would say, or Norm MacDonald to say, in more of the high arts, that wrestling is the closest, I guess, wrestling and adult film stars of, hey, we are delivering a mode of entertainment to your veins. And there's nothing like, I mean, look, I've been to some great concerts and I've seen some, you know, live sports, you know, some hockey games and basketball games, but there's nothing like the fantasy of being in the middle of a wrestling. And then knowing that, like, remember that Super Bowl a couple years ago where it was like, I think it was like the Los Angeles Rams versus the Patriots and it was like 6-9. It was so boring. You know, you're not going to have that with wrestling.
Right. It's guaranteed to be entertaining.
You're going
to
get a show. Or that time we were all excited to see Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, and then we saw it, and we're like, oh, this kind of fucking sucked. With wrestling, you know, for the most part, you know, it's not going to suck. It's going to, you know, it's going to look fake, but it's going to be a real show.
I've been to a couple recently, one in Calgary and one in Toronto with Asif, a couple of bigger events. One was NXT, right?
Yeah.
NXT. Oh, you're embarrassing me.
No, it's okay.
NXT. What did I go to?
Went to AEW. We saw AEW here. You went to Calgary? You saw AEW in Calgary?
I went with Andrew Fung. Yeah. It was wicked. And in fact, if we had any wrestling fans who are listeners, they're going to write in and be like, how dare Dan St. Germain say it's uniquely American? Do you know what the Hart Foundation
provided? I'm sorry. I should have never overlooked the child abuse that is Stu Hart's dungeon.
Yeah, I mean, that's
obviously Jericho, Kenny Omega.
That's what makes a wrestler.
I mean, there's a strong tradition in Mexico and in Britain. but I guess
I grew up in Quebec, which had its own too. I don't know if you know
the Russos,
you know, Bravo and the Russo. Yeah, exactly. My point is, added to everything you've said, which I think is the most legitimate argument pro wrestling, the athleticism.
Yeah,
is inside these the people who are like in better shape than like football players.
Well, they look like they're in better shape. They're actually not in better shape than like somebody.
Well, their hearts are about to
explode. And they have no, you know, like they probably don't have the functional strength that like a linebacker has. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I also think
and the choreography and the, I don't know.
I also think every guy is like a little gay, and maybe like my gayness is in wrestling, you know, like that's where I get it out of these oily men in banana hammocks tossing each other up and down.
Well, let's talk about muscular oiled bodies because
now the podcast I always wanted to be.
That's right. We're devolving in the right way. No, I was going to talk about Dwayne Johnson, who is definitely oiled and muscular.
For sure.
So The Rock is back. And for people who don't know, he became part of the board of directors of Endeavor. And Endeavor is the big corporation that now owns WWE and UFC. And so he's back. And so what do you think his involvement means? He's a huge part of WrestleMania happening this weekend. But what do you think this means for this weekend and then going forward, Dan?
Well, as somebody who still has business with them, you're a lot more comfortable having The Rock as the face of the company than you are Vince McMahon, you know? And I think that's probably the most important thing that The Rock is doing right now, is that he's taking focus off of all the Vince stuff. He's providing a new fresh coat of paint to, you know, it's crazy. I watched the Bray Wyatt documentary last night. And to not see Vince in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like North Korea with elections or something. You never think you're going to see it. I think that The Rock is, you know, this is the perfect time. We've seen this with Hogan, where Rock, who's had actually a legitimate Hollywood career, Hogan never really did. But as Rock's kind of star diminished because of Black Adam and wrestling went up, they kind of met at the perfect time again. This is Rock's version of Hollywood Hogan, you know, Hollywood Rock. Even though he was a heel before, now he's a super heel. And there's also like, you know, that, I guess that the Japanese kind of, I guess, anime where, or even fighting games like Tekken, where, you know, the bad guy is also the CEO of, or the mayor of the town. It feels like that, where it's like, oh, this is like an evil boss that could kick your ass, which we've never had before. I guess we had that a little bit with Hunter, but then Hunter had the heart problems. So I think that we thought that this was going to be The Rock's last match with Roman. Now it's turned to a tag match. Now there's rumors that, you know, we're going to get Rock Cody. We're going to get Rock Roman. And then I wouldn't be surprised if he has a retirement match that's independent from those guys. And I think, too, with wrestling, he's got to be really pumped. He kind of got pushed out of the Marvel universe with the gun stuff. And I'm sure that coming home has got to feel great. Like I'm still the fucking Beatles here, brother, you know, and he'll still be able to do other work. And I think that, like, you know, Hollywood is taking more of a chance, less on the movie star wrestler and more on the Batistas and the Cenas who play character actors who are more character actor based and, you know, lean harder into comedy. I think that The Rock, I'm not going to say The Rock saved wrestling because wrestling was getting hot before The Rock showed up. But the convergence of, you know, Rock in the main event scene and wrestling getting hot again, I don't think is, or getting as hot as it is now, is no coincidence for sure.
I spent a couple of days on a movie that Dave Bautista was in. So I was in a tent with him.
Mm-hmm.
He was very, very serious about getting back into wrestling. That was his love. That was what he wanted.
That's interesting because whenever he's in wrestling, he wants to
get out. Yeah. Okay. Now I know the two of you are fully aroused, but given the time that we have on this podcast, we do have some medical stuff to discuss, and it's not injuries from wrestling, although maybe it should have been, but I wanted to talk to you about something that's kind of near and dear to my heart. It's a weird way to say it, Dan, but you know, I've been doing stand-up for 18 years or 17, 18 years. You start stand-up, and you know, I started in a time at the Comedy Works in Montreal, you could smoke on stage, people were smoking. And if you already have degenerate leanings, you go, wait a minute, I can just work 1 hour a day. And back then it was like 5 minutes a day, right, you know, right, or whatever. Sure. How many? and you can drink while you're working. This is insane.
This is great.
The beer was free if you were performing. And I mean, just a fantasy world for a guy who already liked to drink. And
yeah, for a guy
who you're very open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. No. I mean, you're completely right. You're totally on the money. It's the land of make believe, the land of never growing up.
Totally. And many people don't. And the sort of career gets stunted because they really, you know, lean a bit too heavily into that. And I think at various times I was guilty of that. Definitely seen friends fall off. You're very open about your addiction. I wanted to know, did comedy fuel something that didn't exist fully?
No,
or were
for sure.
You already,
I was
did
already,
you come in as a guy?
I came in, I had my AA seat before my comedy seat.
You know, no kidding.
Yeah, as far as like not being able to handle it. And no, I mean, if anything, comedy got me more sober because I would, you know, there would be like 3 years where I would take off and then another 3 years I would take off. And, you know, I had a pretty bad situation happen last year with my mom and everything. So I've got about like 6 months back, you know, where I'm not smoking, I'm not drinking. So comedy is really kind of like facilitated that in a weird way. Facilitated sobriety, I mean. In a weird way. No, you
that
can't
is
really,
a weird way.
Yeah. I mean, you can't look. I mean, there's actually one guy that comes to mind who's super funny, who's still drunk all the time, but his career has totally suffered from it, you know? And I'm not talking like the Bert Kreischer type of thing where you kind of make a living off of that. I'm more talking about, you know, somebody who I'm going to stay the funniest guy in Boston by, I'm actually not even talking about a Boston comic. I'm talking about somebody else. You know, I'm going to stay the funniest guy in this town by, you know, keeping drunk. And you see the consequences pretty quickly when you're doing comedy. I think weed is a little bit more difficult because like weed, you can kind of kick the can down the road. You can still, you know, kind of numb yourself without, you know, and smoke every day without it destroying your life. You know what I mean? You can, yeah, you know, like, yeah. But then you start to see like, oh, some of my edges are dulling a little bit.
Which makes it almost more insidious.
Yeah,
right?
More insidious. It's like, yeah, it's trickier,
you
I would
feel
say.
It's so, yeah. So harmless and benign, but actually it has maybe it takes a little bit longer, but yeah, you lose your edge for sure.
For sure.
I remember a big wake-up call I had about taking booze out of the equation. We meet Jim Jefferies at the Comedy Works.
Yeah.
My buddy Massimo goes, man, there's Jim Jefferies. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy him a shot. Let's do a shot with Jim Jefferies. We go up to Jim and, hey man, I'm a big fan of yours. Oh, thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Wanted to buy you a shot. He goes, no, I'm not drinking.
Yeah.
And you know, Massimo, what? You're at the biggest festival. You're in Montreal. You know, you're not drinking. And I remember just being like, oh, that's how it's done. That's how you become Jim Jefferies.
You take
time off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gets old, but also you take time off so that you can be sharp when you need to be, which is at a festival when you're talking to people who are from the industry or just surrounding you and interested 100%. In you. You don't want to talk to a drunkard, right?
No, 100%. You don't want to. And you always think, you know, whenever you're drunk, you always think you don't sound drunk. And then you look back and you're like, oh, fuck. I don't know like how I thought that I was this CIA agent where no one can tell my allegiances, but I'm slurring every fucking chance I can get. So, yeah.
I used to audio record my sets and it was clear as day to me. I didn't think so at the time, but I was just like, I just dropped 17 F-bombs in a 5-minute set that do nothing for the comedy. Yeah, and
absolutely.
There is a bit of slurring and I got an angrier edge to me. What am I doing?
Yeah.
It's like ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, and also alcohol, as bad as like being a drunk in your 20s looks, you know, it looks infinitely worse in your 40s and 50s. So, I mean, the reason it like we think it's cool is because, you know, Anheuser-Busch has a financial incentive to make sure it looks cool, you know, like they've got to sell shit. But for the most part, it's not. Having said that, I miss it constantly. I think that's why I've relapsed so many times. But I have no like illusions about what it is anymore. I miss it for the actual reasons, which it numbs my emotions and I'm able to check out. It's not because I think it makes me more creative or, you know, for a while I'm like, well, Tennessee Williams used to drink a pitcher of two pitchers of screwdrivers every day and then, you know, write for a couple hours.
Yeah.
I have no illusions that that's not going to get better. But yeah, man, it's constant battle, dude.
Asif was telling me about this interesting thing when we were talking about having you on the podcast. I was like, oh, very cool. And he said he had actually reached out to you just like a quick message after this because you were on a roast.
Yeah.
And you were roast. It was the roast of Ric Flair.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Massive, like, hero to so many fans of wrestling and wrestlers alike.
Yeah.
Ossoff was saying it really sucked because Dan did the job correctly.
You
roasted Ric Flair as per the job requirement. Maybe you could tell that story so that I'm not taking words.
You know, it's interesting. I thought I completely bombed, and then I rewatched the video, and it was, you know, you could hear what there were laughs. It was like a lot of oohs in the crowd. That whole thing was, you know, I did the roast of Bruce Pritchard, and it was amazing because it was just, it was an actual roast, and we got to really make fun of these guys. And with Rick, there's always going to be an element of a circle jerk, and there's always going to be, you know, he's doing this to rehab his image. So it was, you know, I don't think it was an actual, I think they should have just called it something else, like the toast of Ric Flair, you know, or something the like toast. That.
Sure.
Because, you know, the whole thing about being roasted is you actually get roasted. And I don't think that Rick is capable of that. We've seen that many times before. There were a couple good sets, but for the most part, it was like, whoa, we're making fun of Rick because he drinks a lot and parties too much. I'm like, well, that's been his fucking gimmick for 30 years. Like, that's not an insult. He's cashed in on that forever.
Those are just facts.
I was talking about how shitty of a daddy.
And then, of course, yeah. And then remember, I mean, there was one wrestler who's like, yeah, I know we're supposed to make fun of him, but I can't do this because he's the greatest. Such an idiot.
That guy's such a dickhead, dude. We roasted him on Wrestle Rust like a couple weeks later. And then I got tanked after that. I'm glad you liked the performance, at least. You know, at least somebody did.
I think I told you Reddit was very popular too. But yeah, because you said this on the podcast that you did you relapse after that, like immediately after that?
I had a drink or two beforehand, and then I went to fucking town right after that. Then I went then it ended up me in a hotel room with like Joey Janela in his trunks trying to get me to my room.
You had a couple of drinks beforehand. So do you think if you had really killed the roast and it had been amazing and been exactly what, and everybody had loved everything, do you think you still would have relapsed?
I don't know. I think I would have, like, because I had like a beer or two beforehand, or a whiskey drink beforehand. Afterwards, I probably would have gone, it would have just been a different vibe. It would have been more like, oh, it's a celebratory. And this was more let me douse my depression. But I don't think that there was any way that I could have done better than what I did that night. Like, it was kind of like one of those situations where if I was going to do the jokes that I did, there was no way I was going to do any better than that because they already had, there was enough people there. You know, there were people from Car Shield, the company that, you know, Rick was shilling for the time. I don't think he is anymore. I remember the coach of the fucking Tennessee Titans was there. He just actually got fired this past season. But it was one of those situations where this was not, I brought a gun to a knife fight. I brought a gun to a gunfight, but everyone else brought a knife.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happened. And, you know, online, there's some people who say this sucks, and there's other people who say this is the fucking greatest thing ever. So, you know, it's nice to have, like, one of those sets where it's...
Gun to a knife fight is a great way to describe it. And in the case of Bubba, it seems like he brought, like, a baked banana
which
bread.
Is funny because he's known as, like, the biggest dick outside of...
Yeah.
If you talk to any wrestler or any booker outside of... You know, no one has a kind word to say about Bubba Ray Dudley. He's a dick. He's constantly trying to, you know, fuck over other wrestlers. He's very talented. I think he's a great promo and he's great in the ring, but he's completely in a business for himself. You know, he's just like a worm. He's kind of like a worm. A worm who could very much still kick my ass, so maybe I should shut my fucking mouth. But he totally is. I mean, he's totally a worm. He totally sucks.
I wanted to talk about something else that you discuss in your special, which is encephalitis.
Yeah, my dad almost died from it. He was in the emergency room for like 3 weeks. It was insane.
Maybe, Ossoff, I can ask you to sort of give a medical definition of what encephalitis is. Not typically what you would hear in a comedian's set.
No. Yeah, so it was like, that's interesting.
Make it work. It's
getting pegged, encephalitis, Alex Jones, it's all the things that are going to turn me off from mainstream Hollywood success.
You really get everything in this special. Yeah.
I will say that, you know, and I veered a little bit more towards the Mike Birbiglia format. I love doing storytelling shows and in theater space and all that. But you, for 45 minutes straight, it was quite a marathon. And I was like, why has he not melted into a puddle? You really, energy is high. You're really all cylinders for, and including jokes about some pretty serious stuff. So just before we get into your dad, Asif, why don't you tell people what encephalitis is? I know it's a swelling of the brain, but I don't know if anybody,
People who may be only listening to this podcast for the first time because Dan's on. So I'm a neurologist, child neurologist. So I see this pretty commonly. I say a couple cases a year, probably like 3 or 4 cases a year, maybe a bit more. And so this is inflammation of the brain. It could be the lining of the brain, that's meningitis, brain and spinal cord, or it could be inflammation of the brain itself. The real question when someone comes in with this is, you know, well, what are their symptoms? And it's usually confusion, maybe seizures, maybe they'll have a fever as well. But then it comes down to like, what is the actual cause of this, right? And that's what we have to try and figure out. So I want to ask Dan in a second what happened with his dad, because often it's a virus. And the common one is herpes encephalitis. So herpes is the herpes virus.
Well, my dad has been getting around. I don't know. He had a fall, as an older guy does, and I think he hit his head a little bit. I don't think that helped. I think he had an infection that was in his back, and it just kept spreading. But I was there in real time. You know, I brought him to the hospital, and I saw him having, like, he started being pretty cognizant, and I saw him slip into madness. It was almost like watching somebody, I guess, get rabies.
Rabies can cause encephalitis, exactly. Yeah,
for sure. And we thought for sure he was, this was it. Like, it was really bad. And like almost where he was in a coma. And, you know, ironically, he survived and my mom died a year later. But it was, I mean, we were there. We were in Massachusetts for like 3 weeks. I think that's one of the reasons I got so much away from stand-up, not to blame it on my dad and medical stuff, but I literally went from, you know, 2013, 14, doing it all the time, had a steal. Then I kind of like went into the writing world. I wrote on, like, if you look at my IMDb, like 10 different shows. Then the pandemic happened. Then all these like medical issues happened to my family. And now it feels like I'm finally able to get in, you know, when I'm going to be 40 in May, which is good. Cause if you're a comedian, 40s is kind of your prime, you know? But yeah, it was, it felt like it was like, you know, like fucking Job, where it was like one thing in my family after another happening. And it really, you know, that's like the Warren Zevon thing, man. Life will kill you. The longer you're in it, the more it takes out of you. And, you know, it makes you funnier. It makes you more interesting. And in some ways, I think it makes you a better hang, but it also slowly sucks the life force from you. Not to be all... But encephalitis was nasty, dude.
Our guest is comedian Dan St. Germain, just to remind everyone.
Yeah, everyone.
It'll suck the life of you. But can I ask you, I mean, I find this both shocking and disturbed. Like, I'm actually disturbed that this could, you know, of all the things that somebody can suffer from, this didn't need to be added to the list. What did you mean by you watched him descend into madness?
I have a joke about it. He thought like Tina Fey was trying to kill him at one point. He thought the nurses were all trying to kill him. He kept like kind of like trying to get the tubes off him and run out. He thought he was part of these like experiments. He just had completely lost it. You know, like he had no idea where he was. He knew who I was. He thought my sister was trying to kill him, which, you know, I perversely kind of found kind of funny because she's really fucking annoying a lot of the time. But it was, you know, he had no idea.
And this is not a man who's ever suffered from paranoid delusions or any such thing.
No, right? Not at all. I mean, he struggles with depression. He's had manic depression for sure. But no, this was nothing. This was more closer to like a schizopsychotic episode. Mm-hmm. And having to deal with that for a couple weeks and constantly being in the green room for that. I mean, not the green room. I mean, the hospital. God damn. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got to go on in a couple of minutes.
Such a dick. I'm such a dick. So yeah, I mean, that was a wild experience, man. That was a for sure wild experience.
Asif, when these kids come in, do they have this sort of thing?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, sometimes it just like kind of become comatose, but sometimes you can get the psychosis. And we talked maybe a couple of years ago in the podcast, Dan, about this anti-NMDA receptor encephalitis. So this is more of an autoimmune attack on the brain. Mm-hmm. That one especially, there's lots of reports of people looking kind of floridly psychotic, and then you treat them usually with like immune suppressive, like steroids and stuff like that, and then you can kind of calm things down. So I don't know if your dad got steroids, Dan, or...
Yeah, he definitely got some steroids, and you know, it took a while for him to get kind of back to earth. And then he had, you know, kind of a nurse that would come by to do some physical rehabilitation because it did affect the way he walked for a little bit. But now he's, you know, we just got back from London and he just had a fucking movie that came out, you know, like he's, you know, my dad's a pretty respected playwright. He's back to, you know, my dad, wow. The good thing about my dad is my dad, despite eating like shit and at times drinking like a fish, he has a zest and love for life. And he as much as he does the, hey, I'm this depressed playwright guy. He's a social butterfly, loves going to parties. He loves dating. He loves going to different cities. You know, in a lot of, which is funny because I mean, he would like the lifestyle of a comedian way more than I do. Like whenever after this, I want to like go into, you know, a medical coma, you know, instead of having to do two shows tonight. But yeah, he's definitely more of a, he's, and I think that that's really what saved him because I think, you know, I've seen like, not to get heavy, but like my mom's, I mean, she had a horrible accident that kind of led to her demise, but she also really had given up on life a couple years beforehand. And my dad just doesn't have that in him. He's just constantly like, hey, how can I, you know, make my life more interesting? What new thing can I get? And I do really admire that about him. I wish I had more of that myself at times.
You know, you really just described my dad as well.
Yeah.
He would just sit there with the newspaper and circle, like a film festival's coming to town. He's circling which films he's going to go see on his own. Didn't care. Sometimes a friend joins. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Jazz Fest is in town. He's circling which jazz ensembles he's going to go. And the same thing with the comedy festival. And I'm like, I wish I had a little bit more of that. And I think, I don't know, I feel like all the heavy eating and drinking has lowered my zest a little bit.
Being forced to be on all the time, I think does that too, without a doubt.
Probably right.
So check out my comedy special, Dance Fatty Dance.
I'm gonna sing its praises. I'm gonna sing its praises from the rooftops, Dan.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, buddy.
And in fact, it wasn't your last joke, but just close to the end. You have a joke again, like speaking of things that don't usually make it to the forefront of comedy. And yet this is such a great story. Cerebral palsy.
It's funny you bring that up because that was kind of a combo of two stories. You know, it was a combo of what happened to me in Fort Lauderdale. But I say it's Fort Lauderdale, but that actually happened in Vancouver at the Vancouver Yuck Yucks, which is now shut down. And it's actually even more depressing because I didn't include this part in the, you know, I kind of like got out on a punch, but the guy is like, I'm your biggest fan. Like, that's what he said to me. And I didn't realize he was a big comedy fan. So I was like, not only did I shit on a guy with cerebral palsy, I shit on one of my five fans who happened to have cerebral palsy. It was wild, dude, but hey man, made for a good closer for a little bit. So
yeah, I bet. And it's about you, right? You're not making fun of the dude. It's
no it is making fun of me. I wouldn't make fun of somebody with cerebral palsy.
Exactly. I just want to give that context to people. And also on a personal note, I have been in that position where you're constantly being fed some information about like this person, this table is really being disruptive. This I told them once, and you're just, your stress, your anger starts to build as you're like, why won't this stupid club do something about this horrific person? So I love that bit because the club actually did do the exact thing they're supposed to do before the headliner out of respect for this person who's at the quote unquote top of the game, you know, top of their career. Do them the solid. And you, of course, have had so many experiences probably in your life where the club doesn't do that, that you assume the person.
Oh my God. You know, like sometimes you had to, you know, you have to say, get this fucking person out.
We had just to bring back sports a little bit. The guy who owned the Comedy Works in Montreal was named Jimbo.
Okay.
And the bar downstairs was Jimbo's. And he was notorious for never kicking anybody out. Ugh. Paying customer, no matter what the person was
horrible
doing.
Horrible thing,
So Joe Rogan was there. Joe and Jimbo had a great relationship. Joe's performing. We thought this was a thing that only we knew about Jimbo as a local Montreal comics. He doesn't have the respect for us. So somebody is heckling Joe and he's like telling him off and they're going back and forth. Then he's quiet for a bit. And finally Joe goes, did that guy get kicked out? And Somebody's like, I think so. And he goes, bullshit. Jimbo's probably buying him a beer downstairs. And all the comics are like, oh my God, even Joe Rogan knows this. Even Joe Rogan knows this.
That's so funny.
He was the most anti-confrontational human being, this guy Jimbo.
That's so funny.
But yeah, so I love the bit. I love the special.
Thank you, buddy.
I speak for Asif too, and I will sing its praises.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Of energy throughout. And then I was like, just shocked to see. I'm like, there's an equally fantastic special on, you know, via Comedy Central, but on YouTube as well.
Thank you so much, guys.
25 minute one. You can look up Dan's sets from Conan, which are always terrific. Oh,
yeah. It's a great set.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
A new one in the works. So we are fans, and Asif doubly so because of the wrestling.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you check out our podcast, Wrestle Rose, follow me on Instagram, you know, leave a comment, positive comment on the YouTube special, spread it around, folks.
He's delicate.
Helps he doesn't me. I'm trying to get more bookings. So no, thank you guys. Thank you so much for having me on. It was a treat.
Our pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Dave.
Thank you so much. Dave.
That's our episode for today. Let us know what you guys thought about our interview with Dan St. Germain. Some really interesting insights Dan has, both in the comedy world and his life. We're so happy he was open to share a lot of these things with us today, especially some of the stuff that is a bit more personal and about his family members who've had illnesses and things like that. So a big, big thanks to Dan. Reach out to us. Let us know what you guys thought. DrVComedian@gmail.com. DrVComedian on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are everywhere. Don't forget to check out Dan's special, Dance Fatty Dance, available right now on YouTube. It's definitely worth a watch. Ali, do you got anything going on in April?
What do I got going on? We're going to Prince Edward Island, April 17th. Laugh Out Loud recording there. We're going to be in Parry Sound for a Laugh Out recording in June. Besides that, I'm going to be doing some writing of my own, like Dan St. Germain. I'm going to be working on a project as a writer. So I'll be busy. Can't do the podcast with you anymore. Sorry.
Oh, gosh.
We'll find some time. Imagine that's the way I tell you. And standupali.com is a great place to find out all these details.
So in conclusion, just remember that although I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. Dan and Ali are not doctors either. Medical issues we talk about for your interest and information only, and they're not medical advice. Please consult your medical professionals for actual medical advice. Thanks for listening.
Bye.